Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I'm quite excited and very interested to speak today. Our guest is Craig Curry. He's the public liaison for Protect the Harvest. And Craig has some very new and interesting ideas, I think, for our listeners. And so I want you all to just hear what Craig has to say and see if we can start a kind of an interesting dialogue here. So welcome, Craig.
Thank you so much. And here, it's not that I want to correct anything. Really, what people say about me when it comes to Protect the Harvest, friend and associate of Forrest Lucas and Protect the Harvest. So there's no official capacity or anything like that. It's just that they're great partners, just like in this conversation that I have great partnerships with that I know we're going to be talking about.
Excellent. And so, Craig, tell me exactly what your position is then. Besides a guy that talks to a lot of people.
It's funny. I get asked that all the time. And really what it's boiled down to, I love animals. I love animals. And I try to be a voice for the animals in a sense that a lot of people don't ever want to talk about. So many people, they talk a lot, but they don't necessarily always follow the walk side of things. And this really started out as dogs. And it's funny. Do I own a dog now? No. And I'm very clear about that. I haven't owned a dog in a long time, but I used to raise Dobermans. But my love for animals is amazing. And how I actually got involved in the dog thing, somebody I was working for said, hey, I got this guy. I want you to help him, you know, and he just happened to be a commercial kennel guy. And I didn't really know a whole lot about it. And it will be 10 years ago where I say it's official this coming October. So this was about 12 years ago when this happened. And oh my goodness, did I get an eye-opening, and it's been ongoing for all these years. So I talk to people just like this interview, which I'm so grateful for. You just don't know. I thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to get a message out. It's about animals. I used to say it was just about dogs. Now it's about animals. The dogs are just so near and dear to my heart.
So you have been working in the state of Indiana with commercial breeders.
Yes, ma'am.
We'll be very specific. These are commercial pet breeders, and yes, you have been working with them to upgrade their facilities, upgrade their breeding practices. Talk to us a little bit about that.
It was so interesting. I'll say the word. This is the one that people just go insane over, is that everybody throws around this term puppy mill. And so my first thing, just first getting involved, what the heck is a puppy mill? Well, okay, then I came to understand it. And so I testified numerous times, numerous places. And I'll tell people, a lot of times I'm the guy you don't want to know. I'm the guy you don't want to talk to. But I know what a puppy mill is because I've represented commercial kennels for years. I do know what a puppy mill is, and I don't want them either. So I saw good people trying their best to do a good job. I can find bad with anything in this country. I don't care what it is. But boy, you bring up dogs. Most sensitive, controversial topic in America for probably 10 years when it comes to animals. So many other people, groups, places have put everything on the backs of dogs. And we have anthropomorphized animals so much in this country. And I'm not picking on anybody. I just wouldn't do that. It's not my nature. But dogs have become our kids. They're part of the family. It is ingrained into our culture in the United States, man's best friend. So we got involved. There were so many things that were going on 10, 12 years ago, and made a conscious decision in the state of Indiana of things that were happening, that I had to do something to protect all these good people that I'd gotten to know that had done nothing wrong, and that they wanted to raise dogs. Did they make money at it? Yes, they did. Everybody does in one way or another. That has morphed over time to here I was fighting a fight that people thought I was insane for doing over commercial kennels. We actually were able to get home rule when it came to commercial kennels in the state of Indiana to where, no, you could not put these people out of business, that an individual entity, whether local unit of government, city, county, that they would not be able to do that. There was any number of discussions, agreements. I don't want to just say promises, was that it was a responsibility. With much reward, much responsibility comes about. I can honestly say, and I'm proud to say, everything we ever said that we would do in the state of Indiana, we have more than fulfilled. You could ask from the first governor, Governor Mitch Daniels, through this governor, Governor Eric Holcomb, the state veterinarian who is a constant through the whole thing, Dr. Brett Marsh, have we lived up to our bargain? Yes, we have.
And I think I want to make sure that we're drawing this straight line that goes from legislatively protecting the rights of every breeder, whether it be a commercial breeder or a hobby breeder, and how important that connection is.
So here I was in this group, the Indiana Council for Animal Welfare. There were all these groups. There was nobody to speak for certain species. But when it came to dogs, it's not about commercial kennels. It's not about show breeders. It's not about hobby breeders. It's about dogs. What's the best for all the dogs? That's what this became, is that dogs, canines, are so under attack in the United States. It's amazing. No matter where you turn, whether it's a breed-specific bill or ordinance, or it's a kennel ordinance, or it's this ordinance. And I always talk about Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, the labeling and the divide and conquer mentality. If you can get two groups to fight amongst themselves, then you have taken your eye off people or the prize that's really trying to do damage to you. And that's what happened. That's what happened so much, is that, well, I could never talk to a commercial kennel guy. Oh, I could never talk to a show breeder. Oh, these are horrible people on both sides. Ridiculous. We all need to work together to take care of the thing we love the most, dogs.
Very good. And I think it's something that many of us have a hard time understanding. And it's only been recently, as I've been doing more work on this, that I've come to have my eyes opened a little bit, that the actual estimated demand for dogs in this country, there are some 85 million pet owning homes. There is no way that hobby breeders, show breeders can meet that demand. Is that your estimation?
Absolutely. Here, I'll give you real numbers. I was sitting at a conference last year, and Dr. Andy Rowan, the head of HSIL, that's HSUS International, a name that people will know from the world that I'm speaking in right now, Dr. Patty Strand, she and I had always operated under a number which we knew was low, but you always try to go to numbers that people have accepted and now have become inculcated or ubiquitous into the world you're speaking to, 4.5 million replacement dogs a year. Dr. Rowan, at this conference I was at, he actually gave the real number. We thought he was going to say 6 to 6.5. His number, 9 million replacement dogs a year. Those dogs have to come from somewhere. Now, knowing that there are so few dogs as replacement dogs, where do the dogs actually come from in this country? Hobby breeders, backyard breeders, commercial kennels. Here's one I would believe that the majority of your listeners would know, in the importation of dogs, legally or illegally. Cartels are involved with importing dogs because it's such huge money. It's incredible what has happened to the point that whether it's CDC or USDA, they have stepped in. I would think most of your listeners would know about what we all tend to call the retail pet store rule. The retail pet store rule has nothing to do with brick and mortar stores. It's about sight seen or sight unseen sales of any dog. And so there's X amount of rules that were written, but that's where a lot of this, not that it wasn't being addressed before, but we're beginning a public policy statement. This is where we look at on the importation of dogs. From my side of the house, where we have been vilified so much, oh, it's these guys that are causing the problem. The OIC database that comes from USDA, it's had its struggles. It's had its struggle, easiest way to say it, over the last couple of years.
Yes.
And Bernadette Juarez, the deputy director, is a good friend of mine. I'm just lucky enough that I have the database from 2014 and 2015. That's federal fiscal year database. Here's real numbers. I'm going to use 2015, which ended basically the end of September of 15. 92,383 adult dogs on the ground. Licensed USDA kennels. Obviously, I will take out research animals. There is a particular company in America that produces beagles. Most everybody's probably aware who that is. There's some other people. Those numbers don't belong in the number I'm going to give you. Commercial kennels, the puppies that are produced, sold to pet stores, sold to direct, sold whatever. Through quantitative analysis, we took 250 breeders. That was the number that, by quantitative, was the right amount. Here's what we came up with. 3.3 puppies per adult dog. It had to be sires and dams. You look at all of that, you come through, and I'm going to give you a livestock number because that's what we chose to use because it was the most rational number that we could back up. You keep 13% back for broodstock, which ultimately leads you to another number. And this is the one that tends to get everybody. We rounded up. That year, we produced 285,000 puppies to be sold to a consumer somehow, some way, somewhere. Now, if I take the number that I told you originally that we had used for replacement dogs, the 4.5 million, that said one out of every 18.2 puppies sold to a consumer in America, one came from a licensed breeder. I'm a bit of a smart aleck. Where did the other 17.2 come from? Once I'd heard Dr. Rowan's presentation and actually talked to him at length about this, double it. That's all I have to do because 4.5 to 9 is just double. Okay, so one out of every 36.4. So when everybody goes, where am I going to get a dog? But yet, my guys, as I call them, my group of folks, we're the problem. Really, we're a drop in the bucket. It ultimately comes down to choice. If somebody wants an absolute show dog, absolutely go buy a show dog. Buy it from a good, great breeder. If you're looking for a companion animal, you want to buy from us, buy from us. By bottom line, you want to get a dog from a valid, doing it for the right reasons, rescue, get it from the rescue. But to just say blanketly, being labeled, and I've already brought up Saul Alinsky's rule for radical, these are bad people. Not true. Every one of us in this dog world has bad people. Every one of us.
True enough.
And until we all learn to work together, that it's about the dogs and it's not about the humans, who's actually suffering here? The dogs are the ones that are suffering. Everybody talks about welfare, but what are they actually doing for the welfare of dogs and for the ability to keep doing what we all love?
So that's a great segue, Craig. Good job.
Thank you.
Good job. Good segue. So let's talk very specifically. What steps have you taken in Indiana to challenge the commercial pet breeders and improve the health, improve the well-being, improve the socialization of their animals?
Oh, boy, that's a big question. It spans, I'm really going to say 10 years. The first thing is that that dog is not just a product. It's a living, breathing, sentient being. Why are you doing this? That's what I would say to my folks. Why are you doing this? You know, are you doing it because, well, I like hogs, I like chickens. and I can make some money and feed my family. There were so many people that they looked at dogs as a somewhat sidelined business. No problems there. If that's what you want to do and you raise the animals correctly, that's fine. But we started looking at things, how do we do a better job? Who do we talk to? What veterinarians, what corporations, if you will, whether it be dog food companies, toy companies, whatever. Every one of us, no matter what part of dogs we sit with, know about who all the people that will market to you as a dog owner or a dog provider. How do we do a better job? And we started doing things. When I talked about getting the home rule, if you will, taken away, that's how I got started. But one of the things that we did, we started having a conference. We'll be having our 9th one in Indiana this year. Speakers that you just can't even imagine that would come. Names that you would know through the years. Pat Hastings, Betsy Fogel. We started really looking at how we were raising these animals and looking at our kennels. And that was kind of the first pass, because everybody, no matter who they are, have seen the pictures that roll on the television. This poor dog, this poor cat. But let's stay on the dog side of it. Give me your $19.95 a month, the contention funding side of this. We don't ever want to be looking that way. It wasn't like that then. It sure as heck is nothing like that now. It's about education. It's about information and reaching out and networking with other people, trying to break down barriers between humans. We started on a kennel program. In this 10 years, approximately 200 new kennels have been built. I have an open invitation to your listeners. Contact you. Contact me. I'll be happy to take you to these kennels. You'll be amazed. You'll be amazed at what you see. It's been probably one of the most gratifying things is that people will throw that puppy mill term or whatever term you want to throw there or talk bad about us. Have you ever been to one? Because of that law, that in Indiana, I'm specifically talking to Indiana, very easily, we are so transparent, because that was really the first thing that a core group of people said, we must be transparent. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to hide. But you also want to have knowledge and information from other people that care so much about the animals, that do a great job. All parties talk to all parties. That has been this consistent effort for 10 years. You might say one of the biggest things that came out of this is I got to meet Dr. Candace Crony. Candace is the director of the Center for Behavior and Welfare at Purdue University. And we talked to her. Now, ultimately, after 5-6 years, what has come about is the Center for Canine Welfare. There is a certification program that comes out of this. In a nutshell, voluntary compliancy. People will look at it and they go, oh, this is for commercial kennels. No, that's not true. If you have a sire and a dam, if you wanted to go this way, you could, but it's voluntary. So we took the full force and weight of Purdue University, the vet school, and the ag was involved as well, to go, we want to do a better job. And there was a term that was created in ICAL many years ago, raise the bar. That's what we keep doing. I come from the manufacturing world and software. It was manufacturing software, but just in time. That's where a lot of the concepts have come from. Constant improvement, quality assurance. I know that sounds funny saying it to a show breeder, but you know what? They're doing the same thing in their own way. Is that I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it has just constantly been going.
I was going to have you talk about some of the commercial kennels, and I was reading through the newsletter from your organization, and folks were writing stories in the newsletter talking about their new socialization programs and their specific health and welfare maintenance programs and some of those things that have been implemented as a result of the work you're doing? And that's what I was thinking specifically. We could talk a little bit about those.
Sure. So many of the folks that raise animals, and I use the term livestock, these are companion animals. But a lot of times the people that are raising dogs commercially, they came from a farm world, a livestock world. And it was that the animal was a number. No, that's not what it is. It's about animal husbandry. And so once we were able to work on that connection, if you will, we're going to do this differently. One of the first things that I ever said to anybody in any number of meetings all over this state, said, okay, boys and girls, here's what you have to think about. That puppy is going to go home with somebody. It's probably going to be on the bed. It's going to be with somebody's granddaughter. It's going to be with somebody's uncle, grandfather, grandmother, mother, father. Would you want that animal that you produced, that you bred, to be with your grandmother, your grandfather, your child, your cousin? And that resonated with folks. We want somebody to have the best Mini Aussie, the best German Shepherd, the best whatever, the best that we could possibly do because of this connection to man's best friend. So we've worked so much on it. The behavior and welfare, I think it's just one of the greatest things that we do. I have a kennel in southern Indiana, and I send so many people down here to see it. You haven't lived till you see 40, 50 dogs out in this play area going up and down the stairs to a play set, and they're all sliding down a slide. They're dogs being dogs and having fun. Pools of water for them to play in if that's what they want to do. Pools of sand if they want to dig. Is that animal happy? Is that animal healthy? That has been the mantra, if you will, in the state of Indiana. That is exactly what these folks have tried to do. But we're also bridging a divide that was there, created by other people, that said, come see what I do. Help me be better. Show me what else that you want to do.
And that's another great segue. I really love that story that our mutual friend Jen Smith told me about your bringing some of the commercial breeders to the dog show in Muncie last month.
Yep.
And working with the executive field representative, working with the judge in the ring, and her description of I don't mean to be unkind, the two Amish guys in the ring with she said it was Nancy Leaps in the Best Bred By ring. And she's going through and explaining to these commercial breeders what they're judging, what they're looking at, why it's important. And I would love to hear from you on how you were able to set that up and ideas for how other people might do some of the same work in other areas.
We, as a group, this core group, we were consciously trying to make some decisions on how to do an outreach to the clubs, to these different dog shows, different ways, whether it was agility, whether it was just straight show. We went to the, help me out here, Laura, over the years, it's always called it the clusters.
Right.
You know, was it up
right
in Muncie?
Yep. I think that was the iced tea circuit or something.
Okay. You know, I needed your help on that one. Here's the funny part of this. So there's three original founders of ICAW. One of them is with me. He and I, we get dropped off up at the clusters. And we're sitting on a bench. Obviously, he's Amish. And there were so many people at this thing. So we were there first. It had already spread before the other 12 people that came that were Amish that, oh, my God, the Amish are here. Oh, they're going to steal our dogs. Oh, they're going to try to buy our dogs. No, we were there to see.
To learn.
Thank you. If we don't understand something, we're scared of it. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, this just happens to be one place. We ultimately made a bunch of friends that day over the years. Some purebred breeders, if you will, because from my side, we don't say show breeders. We'll say purebred breeders totally. Some people had gotten in trouble, and the Amish were the ones that went and helped out. That bridge that had a divide, there were only a few planks left to put in place. But everybody was seen at the highest levels to the mid-levels. Man, we're all in this for the same reason, our love of dogs. we had tried to actually do some of the show breeding things, and there were some very brave people in this country. That's what I'll say. You're laughing.
Yep. Nope, you're right. They were brave.
They were brave, and we talked about, and you'd have to help me out here, too, because I don't have that side of it memorized, like the junior program.
Junior showmanship, yep.
Yeah, what a wonderful thing to see Amish children with what we call English children. They're kids with a love of dogs and out there going, this is fun. Isn't that what we ultimately want? So all of this goes on, and with the struggle with dogs in the United States, there's not as many shows. There's not as many judges. You know, everywhere you turn, everybody's under attack. So everybody's looking like, hey, we need sponsorships. We need help.
Well, I think what the conversation that's happening in the Purebred Dog Fancy is that we need new people. We need new breeders, and we need educated breeders.
Yes.
And so I think one of the things that is really impressive to me, what you guys have been able to accomplish in Indiana, is taking people already with some awareness of animal husbandry, raising the bar, as you said, to a level at which people are health testing their animals, at which people are paying attention to grooming and socializing their animals, at which people are rehoming retired breeding animals, carefully selecting, rehoming. These are the sorts of things that are taking place in the programs that you've created that people in the Purebred Dog Fancy simply aren't aware of. And I think that that's an important piece. And I'd also like to talk about ways that our hobby breeders, our, if you will, show breeders, the Purebred Dog Fancy, ways that we could help bridge that gap, reach out to commercial breeders talking about ethical breeding practices, best practices for animal husbandry, genetics, all of those sorts of things.
You know, it's interesting that you just said that. I talked to someone this morning. They're down in Missouri. They're doing the health checks right now. And I'm saying OFA.
OFA?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done over, as if I'm not mistaken, the number now is 2,300 OFA checks on Indiana dogs at commercial kennels.
And that would be just in the last few years, right, Craig?
Absolutely. Is that these folks that do this, they want to do a good job. They want you to have the absolute finest animal that they can produce for you. They love what they're doing, and they're proud of what they're doing. Probably the best presentation I have ever seen at any seminar in the United States with commercial kennels, this friend of mine from up northern Indiana, he called it How to Be a Respectable Amish Breeder. His opening 4 minutes was what gets you if you're somebody like me. He's walking in front of this group of about 500 people, and he says, this is where we started. He said, somebody will ask you, what do you do for a living? His head goes down where his chin's almost touching his chest. I'm a dog breeder. You go, what do you do? I'm a dog breeder. He was ashamed of what he was doing. He'd done nothing wrong, but he was afraid to say that's what he did because he loved doing it. It's not like that anymore. What do you do? I raise dogs. I love them. I love what I'm doing. I want other people to.
You know, just hearing you say that, that piece right there is absolutely one that crosses all borders. Hobby breeders have the same problem. We've ducked, we've run, we've blushed, we've said, oh, I almost never breed. It's terrible to breed. And now we find ourselves with a shortage of animals as a result.
Well, how many breeds could you tell me, Laura, the amount of dogs that there aren't? They're not there.
That's right. There are huge numbers of breeds around the world, and we've talked about this on other Pure Dog Talk episodes, that the numbers of specific dog breeds are lower internationally, worldwide, than pandas. Things like Dandie Dinmont Terriers and Sealyham Terriers and some of the other breeds that are legitimately endangered. And I think that one of the things that is becoming a topic of conversation within the Purebred Dog Fancy is the fact that as heritage breeders, as preservation breeders, we need to breed dogs. If we are going to preserve this history that is represented by, say, for example, a Dandie Dinmont Terrier, that we have to actually be able to produce them, and that it all wraps into this same topic of legislatively protecting everyone's right to breed dogs, ethically, safely, responsibly, protecting everyone's right to choose what type of dog they want, be it a purebred dog, a hobby bred dog, commercially bred dog, rescue dog, you name it, that those choices are what are imperative to the future of the pet owning public.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, what we as canine people have allowed to happen is to have that wall put there that says, we can't talk to that person. We won't talk to that person. For us to help each other, to ultimately help the dog that we love so much, zip your lips and open your ears. Both sides. We all need to just sit down and talk to one another. Help me do better. I'll take people to see the kennels. And I mean, we do kennel tours all the time. The first words out of somebody's mouth after they've done the whole tour, can you build me one of those? Can you do something like that for me? Well, yeah, we can. You watch some of the funniest, craziest stuff over different concepts, different ideas, things that, in a sense, the world that we're talking about from your world, they didn't even know existed, and how much better it was for the animal. We're breaking these barriers down. Open communication is how we make this better. When Pat Hastings came, she's done the puppy puzzle twice for us. I mean, she loves coming here. So many of the other folks that come, they love coming here because what are we doing? We're actually talking about dogs. We're not talking about you're a commercial breeder, you're a fancy breeder, you're a sporting dog. No, we're talking about dogs. How do we make it better for the thing we love?
And I think one of the things that Jen Smith, our mutual friend, that suggested this conversation that I thought was so powerful is talking about having breeding seminars and educational opportunities, and that many of the commercial breeders that are there are adamantly taking notes and really taking the time and opportunity to learn, and that that is a distinct difference from some of the members in the Purebred Dog Fancy who don't take that opportunity as often. So I think that, as you say, open communication is a very valuable tool.
I come from this manufacturing, just-in-time kind of, or lean manufacturing, whichever one it come from. And so one of the things that's happened here, just like you have clubs, we have chapters. And so where this all kind of started coming from was what we called micro-focus groups. All over this state, these micro-focus groups will meet. They'll talk about genetics. That day for that quarter or that month, let's talk about this. Let's talk about kennels. Let's talk about behavior. Let's talk about welfare. We are doing that. They will bring in one or two people, usually no more than three. These are small groups of people, 5 to 20 people. And it's doing this all across the state. Now, this concept, if you will, has been embraced. It wasn't that it, in a sense, started here. Some of the stuff with the regulatory agencies, yes, it started in Indiana where you're breaking down the barrier of like, oh my gosh, USDA is walking in, or the Board of Animal Health is walking in, or the county's walking in, or the city, because in Indiana, I have the potential to be regulated by 4 different government entities. That's something that is different. Not that the show world isn't seeing this now.
Oh no, we have it too.
Yeah, well, I'm very aware of that. You know, Sheila Goff, another common friend between you and I. Hey, Sheila, what are you doing and where are you at today?
Hey, Sheila.
Exactly. Hey, Sheila. You know, we're all fighting the same battle just to hang on to this thing we love and to retain choice. So we did these micro-focus groups. The other thing that is such a big thing, in Indiana we call it KMA. Kennel management. It really goes back to what's called Markai, that comes from a Kaizen project, New Eyes. Every one of us, I don't care what kind of dog you raise, I'm going to raise a term up that we're all familiar with, kennel blind. Okay, I walk in, I didn't see that, and I didn't see this, and I didn't notice that, but New Eyes will see it.
Nice.
It's constant improvement. Now, in the show world, same thing is going on. It's like as you go through you just started showing dogs, they're relying on other people to help them. Breeders of merit. How much do you want them helping other people? The people that you go, oh my gosh, if I'm going to talk about Bedlingtons, I know who I'm going to go see.
Mentoring.
Thank you.
And mentoring, I think, is another line that runs, a bridge, if you will, that runs between these. And it was actually Bill Shelton who was the first person who talked to me about this topic that really made me kind of sit back on my heels and go, okay. But I really believe that the idea of working together with hobby breeders, with show breeders, with commercial breeders, with everyone who is involved at some level in the business of creating puppies for people to have in their homes, that we all need to be able to work together and that we can learn from each other is such a valuable concept.
Every one of us has done this. So many people in this world, oh, you know, I do this and it's that. I'll talk about horses to prove my point. I got involved with a thing called CDE, combined driving. It's the most amazing hobby I've ever seen. I'm going to spend $250,000 to win a 75-cent ribbon. It's still a business. We have this problem. It's a business. Okay, I understand that the hobby breeder goes, it's not a business to me. Sure it is, because you have to do something to allow you to do your hobby unless you're just independently wealthy. Are there people in your world that are independently wealthy? Yes. How many people struggle to go through to get to be a grand champion and all the things that you know, and what do you have to do, and what products do you have to buy, and how many miles do you have to travel? It is a business. But we almost now, it's got this bad connotation, and that comes from, once again, an outside influence or outside influencers, and we hesitate. There's no harm. It is a business. It can be a hobby business. It can be a hobby. Still have to pay for it. It can be a business that pays for itself. There's no harm in making a profit. Now, if you're cutting corners and dodging and doing things that you know, very wise person, when I first got involved with this, he said, I don't really care what you do as long as it's not illegal or immoral. I think that pretty well covers it. What are your reasons for doing what you're doing? If I make money because I have this incredible animal and you want to buy it, what's the harm in that? What's the harm that you go, I'm really all about getting out that ring, whether it's Westminster or Eukanuba, the clusters, or if it's Podunk, Indiana. Who am I to say you shouldn't do that? And that was that bridge. We've had numerous ones at this agility thing up in Muncie. I wasn't there, but I saw video and I saw pictures. Literally, I cried because that's what I wanted to see. We didn't care about, well, it's this and it's that. You know, we weren't labeling anything. We were there for the love of the dog. Isn't that what it's all about?
It is, Craig, and I really, really appreciate your time and spending some time with us, with our listeners, to maybe open some more eyes and talk about all of the things that we can do to work together to protect the dogs we love. So thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate it. Here, let me make an open invitation. September the 29th and the 30th at the Fort Wayne Coliseum, the 9th annual I Call Seminar, the Indiana Council for Animal Welfare. Please come. Please come. You know, look for me, or, you know, just tell people at the front desk, hi, I'm from this world, and I heard Laura and Craig talking about this stuff, and I'd like to see, too. You'll be embraced. You have my word. You'll be embraced. We're all in this for the love of dogs.
Thank you, Craig. That is really amazing. And we'll make sure that there is information available on the website, links and details where people can learn more. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to Laura at puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.